Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Keats, this is one of them chefy ones, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm the fourth wheel at a table full of chefs. Yeah, I'm just going to let them chef it out, to
it's
be honest.
You know what?
There are three chefs and me.
Can I say, one of the reasons that Tommy and Paul are two of my favourite chefs is they are the most non-chefy people. They're just, like, really good dudes.
That's what chefs always say about themselves. that's just a chef thing to say.
Paul Ainsworth and Tommy Banks are coming to do the podcast together today, and I'm very excited.
Tommy Banks, they're both really successful chefs. We went to Paul Ainsworth's restaurant when we were in Cornwall.
I also went up to Yorkshire to Tommy's place, the Black Swan at Olmsted. They have a similar beauty in the way that they deliver what they do. It's really like they're Michelin star chefs. It's very, you know, fancy pants, kind of high end in that way, but it feels so soulful.
Yeah,
because they're such good people,
and they built their businesses and their restaurants with their families. Paul with his wife Emma, and Tommy with his mum, his dad, and his brother,
and his wife Charlotte.
So it's they understand the family within hospitality, which we understand.
All right.
Is that the real doorbell?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's the real doorbell.
You've not actually heard the real
doorbell before. We're off to have a chef party. Yes. I'll get into the door first.
Okay. I can't believe you came all the way to the door.
Hi, Tommy. I'm Mickey.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Welcome to our table, Paul and Tommy. Thank you so much.
Delicious, Makita.
Oh, thank you.
That is a very nice hot toddy. Shall I tell you what I've made you to eat? Smoked chili syrup, blood orange chicken wings.
What the actual?
And then we've got curried onion and coconut seasoned rice with those crispy onions out the bag because they're the best.
They're the best.
They're just the best.
They are.
And then we've got some tostones, which are like twice fried plantain. You cook them and you splash them and you fry them again with a little bit of green seasoning. And then we've got a chana dal. We've got a cucumber relish and tamarind chutney.
Oh!
And a little buttered ghee chicken broth.
Help yourself!
That's quite nice, isn't it?
That's unbelievable.
That's really nice. But you could just drink that.
So much flavour.
That's incredible.
Is it?
That is incredible.
Isn't it?
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I'm rolling my sleeves up for this work.
Yeah. Do you want a bib? I mean, I always thought we should have a restaurant with bibs.
Do you know what? That's blown me away. That's never had something like that. That is absolutely incredible.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm so excited, Andy, right? Because you know when we do Great British Menu?
Yeah.
And like obviously we spend a lot of time together. And whenever there's any like Caribbean cooking or things that I don't know anything about...
Yeah.
I'm always like, Andy, I don't know what this is.
It's cassava, Tommy. Don't panic, it's just cassava, Tommy.
And you're like, I'll tell you if it's any good or not. And you usually say, this isn't what it is supposed to be.
It's not supposed to be, because they try and slip a few things by us.
And then she says, you come round my house and I'll cook you.
I'll show you some shit.
Yeah.
Right, so this is you showing Tommy some shit.
I'm showing you some shit.
Okay, as chefs, do you get cooked for often or ever?
Yeah, so Emma does pretty much all the cooking at home. And I'll be really honest that I like to do the stuff that like gives you that like adrenaline.
Very shy.
Wednesday midweek tea doesn't do it for me. Christmas Day, I'm your man. Every pot, every pan, whole spread,
like
all the
proper
others.
Proper old fashioned dad.
Yes.
Cooking. Is that what you're like? What a nightmare.
Yeah, and like organised chaos.
In your head.
Yeah.
Everybody else is shit everywhere. Yeah.
But it's so much more messy at home, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you get from your wife, God, but you wouldn't do that at work. And you're like, well, but I'm not at work.
Now I'm at home and you get all the chaos.
And there's a little blood orange radish pickle here as well. I forgot about that bit.
Yes.
And then summertime, like the kind of, like Emma's family's real, like she's got a real big family. So when all the family come down, I don't know, like this, you know, when you're just putting bowls and plates and pots and everyone's getting stuck in, grilling all the meats. Now I love it.
But you actually have built your business with your wife? You do it together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you both do have family businesses, don't you?
I mean, yours is the very essence.
It's got all the generations.
But they weren't actually chefs, but they did buy their local pub. And they ran a B&B as well.
Yeah, so mum and dad ran the bed and breakfast. By the way, growing up in a bed and breakfast, terrible.
Is it?
You've got to be quiet all the time, haven't you?
What made you go, let me get involved and let me...
I had no interest. I mean, I'm sure if you asked Paul, he probably grew up wanting to cook, but I had no interest whatsoever. I wanted to be a professional cricketer.
I love that.
And like, I just washed up in the pub, carried out a few plates, maybe glazed a creme brulee, that sort of thing. I just wanted to be away as far as possible. I got ill. I had this illness called ulcerative colitis when I was like 18. Right. That stopped me from being able to play sport. And then...
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, so that was me done. So then I was like, well, what the hell am I going to do? And it was that sort of time when, like, Gordon was first on the TV and stuff, and, like, you sort of... Because being a celebrity chef was, like, quite fashionable.
And it looked exciting.
Yeah, and so I just got stuck in.
He's gone with it.
Funny you said it, but kind of similar story to Gordon with, you know, that injury, playing football.
Oh, yeah, he used to play football,
On the first team for Rangers, and then got a really bad knee injury.
Who are the Rangers?
The Scottish mum, Jesus.
I'm not sure which Rangers. I love that. Queen's Park Rangers.
The funny bit is, who are the Rangers?
Who are the Rangers?
Not even like, you know, Rangers?
Me and our producer T yesterday were talking about the Arsenal game the other day, and he was like, we've got to go together. My mum went, go where? We were like the football mum.
I was like, I'm going to football. Why would I go to football?
Anyway, probably because the same adrenaline in sport could be found in a kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. There's that competitive thing, isn't there? Mm. But also, I just think it's something to throw yourself into. Like, getting an illness at a really young age.
How old were you?
I was 18. Mm, and, God. Like, I had a colostomy bag at the time and things like that. God. And I was sort of bedridden and all the sort of
like
things you want to
prime.
Do as a... in your youth, like, was sort of taken away. So I think, like, for me, it was, like, quite angry, really. And I just wanted to throw myself into something. And that was just a muse for doing it, really.
And it's quite a punishing thing to throw yourself into. It's so all-consuming. You can't do cooking a bit.
No, but when you're in that mindset, though, I think it gives you a good outlet because you can work all the hours and you can be a bit of a sadomasochist and it, like, works and you can be... Which is very unhealthy and terrible, but it was the right thing for that time.
Also unhealthy. I was going to say, thank you for being so honest. Chefs are bonkers, I think. Like, to want that kind of craziness around them all the time.
I don't want that anymore.
Right.
Oh, I'm far too old and chilled out for that now.
Really?
Well, a little bit. Just little doses, right?
Little flare-ups.
Yeah. Depends how many hot toddies you've had.
Because me and Mum were saying, actually, because obviously we know a lot of chefs. I know a lot of chefs. Mum obviously knows every chef in the country. And we were wondering about, like, kind of being young and, like, raving and, like, clubbing and all that. I feel like a lot of chefs miss that part of youth because if you are chefing and you're in the kitchen, that's not going to be part of your life.
Because when we did the music... Great British Menu won 50 years of British music. I was just like, if one more chef picks an Oasis song, I'm going to lose my fucking mind.
Yeah.
I was like, what is going on? We've never left the house? What is this shit? Then she was like, Oasis. And then Natalie Fort went, what is Oasis? I was like, it's a long story. It's a really long story.
It's probably quite accurate. Yeah.
Terrible.
Well, you're always working when everyone else is out, aren't you?
Yeah. The kind of sort of music I loved and still love, played... really sort of well into the life as a chef. So I, when I was about 18 years old, sort of just got really into house. Oh, first ever album, like Boy George and Pete Tong album. Ah! And then that just then followed suit that when I moved to London, when we were finishing it, you know, 12, 1 in the morning, we were going to Fabric, Pasha, Ministry of Sound. So all of that was open. So that kind of music, that life. And then, you know, the Holy Grail, when I was, that was 2003, went to Ibiza. So was just,
and it was over.
That style of music for me, and it still is like my absolute favourite type of music.
You are quite unusual.
Yeah. Marcus Waring dropped like a few of us off to Pasha. Like he dropped us off, and you could just tell he was almost like, I'd give anything to be going in there with you boys right now, because we're just like,
I'd like to see,
yeah, because yeah, like back then, so Petrus was open Saturday night but shuts Sunday. It was a 6 day a week restaurant, so
Petrus is where your career started.
No, it actually started with the amazing late great Gary Rhodes. In London, and then in Southampton, I worked at a couple of hotels, going to college, doing all of that, and then I moved to London when I was 18.
So you're the only classically trained chef at this table?
Yes.
Yes.
I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not.
Did you not do any of that, Tommy?
Nothing, no. Just on the job.
On the job, but
by the way, was Marcus wearing in like his full white chef's jacket?
No.
I'm just imagining like Master Chef style.
To be fair, we were all hunched up in the back of his Porsche 911. And we couldn't quite work it out. We were like, how much information you give? Like, what time do you think you'll get in then? Oh, I don't know. We'll just go for a couple of hours, Marcus. Yeah.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So back then, the culture that you came up in,
yeah,
in kitchen culture, is so different to kitchen culture now. How do you reckon it's changed, like...
Hugely. You know, we would work 90 to 100 hour week, easy. You didn't bat an eyelid, it was you...
What you did.
That was what you did. You never thought about hours or anything like that. You actually more thought about it, right, okay, this is the kitchen I want to be in.
Right.
And these are the hours that are required.
Yeah.
And
if I want to stay here.
Yeah. And my mindset was always, it was never, ever about money. It was, and also as well, it wasn't even about hours. Because when I joined Royal Hospital Road, you had Nico Ledenis on Park Lane with 3 Michelin stars, Marco Pierre White with 3 Michelin stars. So you had all of these incredible restaurants.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, the one I wanted to go to was, I don't know, it was just something about, and Gordon actually wasn't, you know, Gordon wasn't known like Gordon
like,
now.
Yeah, it was
just, but it was just something about there that I was like, I want to go work there.
The thing that suffers for so many people is family.
Yeah.
And you guys have both got really strong families.
Yeah.
Do you think it's because you come from strong families?
Yeah, exactly. Like Tom, I was born in a guest house. The family home was the business.
So it's just second nature to you. Actually, it's very interesting because I've stayed in both of your hotels.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they are both like... next level, amazing. Like,
you did not shut up about Paul's place.
I did not shut up about your place. I did not shut up about the Black Swan either. It was amazing. Isn't that your grandma's old house?
Not my grandma, but like an old relative. Yeah,
an old house. It's the most gorgeous house, these incredible rooms. It's the detail. Mm. You even had hot chocolate, Paul. She I got back me. From dinner.
She called me.
And there was like, a flask of hot chocolate. And I was like, oh, there's rum in that kitchen. And I went round and I saw a little shot of rum and a hot chocolate. And I sat on the edge of the bed and my toes, I swear to you, curled up.
Can I just tell you something that's really funny about what? That story? I didn't know you did that, what but there's already alcohol in the hot chocolate.
So already boozy.
So we put Frangelico in it. But I love the fact that you then added rum to it.
You know what this needs? Spot of rum.
Can't take your chances, can you?
But it was a really special experience coming to both of your places, actually. And what interests me about both of you as chefs, I mean, I love both of you and we're mates and we work together and all that. But actually, objectively, when I stand back, what's interesting about both of you is that you're really meticulous about what you do. The detail is incredibly important, but you're like really, there's a kind of duality. It's almost like an oxymoron. It's like you're really tough, really meticulous, but really gentle at the same time about what you do. And I think that's a really hard balance to strike. Are you aware of it? Tommy, tell me first.
Maybe not in the terms that you said, but like it's such a team game that I think sometimes people like myself and Paul maybe get credit for things that are probably actually isn't my level of detail. It's probably someone else's. And I think the thing is you probably need like 6 or 8 people in a core business that can actually have those characteristics.
Who think like that. And what about you, Paul? Is it conscious with you that bringing those two kind of worlds together and that kind of energy together, is it a thing you think about?
Yeah, it's definitely conscious for me because, like you all said earlier, I went through a different type of training.
Yeah.
And it was a very sort of, military-like, intense type of training, which was incredible. And when I moved to Padstow, I think the thing for me was I was just very fortunate to meet an incredible mentor that showed me the business side. But more so, when you say the word business, people automatically jump to the sort of the financial side of things, which is hugely important, but actually the people.
Yeah.
And that was a massive eye-opener for me. That was, if we were going to build something fantastic, it actually wasn't going to be me. It was more my job to build the people and pass on that knowledge and pass on that nurturing and that guidance. And it's actually a bit like what Tommy's saying there about, you know, sometimes if we get the credit, it's actually the team, the people that build the businesses.
Yeah, of course.
I try to be as hands-on as I can in a culinary sense. And I spend as much time as I possibly can, always at like, you know, at number 6.
In the kids. Are you still doing development?
You know, in terms of like the menu writing with Chris, as you know really well.
Chris McClurg.
Chris on Great British Menu.
Oh. Yeah,
I had the pleasure of eating his food. So yeah. It was good.
Oh man, that boy can cook.
Yeah, me and Chris have a conversation about dishes, food, menus every day.
Yeah.
When I moved to Padstow, there was 4 of us.
Yeah.
And there's now like 166 people.
Wow.
Currently.
Wow.
You know, there's
a lot, you've got a group.
A group. Few operations. So you...
Couple of
cats. And it's not like, oh, cool, how did it get here? You know, I wanted it to go in that way, but also to grow people.
Yeah.
You know, and Chris being a good example. The journey he's gone on and how he's kind of grown and he's matured and there's so many people like that now in the group is amazing. So, yeah, it's something that definitely conscious, but something that I've just embraced and loved and realised that everything that we do is absolutely reliant and about the people.
That shows on the plates. It shows on the plates of the food in both of your places, for sure. But also, thinking about at Great British Menu, when it's one of your chefs that's there, I always know, I can tell, even because they have a culture where they nurture the other chefs around them.
Yeah.
As well as doing the work that they do.
How do you feel about the TV? Because you're both on it now quite a lot. And that was part of the plan?
Yeah, I mean, for me,
on screen.
I can take it or leave it. Most things I say no to because it's not my bag. But if there's something that would really grab me, I'd be really into it.
Like, well, you always do GVN.
I enjoy. Well, see, yeah, but I love it. It's great. You go down, spend a week with Andy, eat some delicious food. Like, that's really good fun. Like, it's not really a chore. If there's a really good project come up, I would be all over it. But at the same time, I'm not desperate to do it.
Yeah, that's the best way to be. If you're chasing it,
it's always slips through your fingers. If what you're focusing on is the art or the craft or the artistry
and
or the detail, the work or the service or sharing or what you're giving back, if you do that, then the other things will appear around it, I think.
Yeah.
What about you, Paul? What's it like for you? What was it like stepping out of the kitchen and then being on telly?
Mine was not part of the plan. And funnily enough, the very first thing I ever did, 2011, was Great British Menu.
Oh, it was the first thing?
The phone call. First thing, phone call sort of came through and you're like...
How scary?
I was just bowled over.
Is it scary altogether?
You've got this, you've got up until that point, you're seeing all of the, you know, all of your peers and heroes and people you look up to doing this show year after year.
Yeah.
And then you're getting the phone call. So that was unbelievable. It was good because, you know, had some success on it. And then after that, the next gig was Saturday Kitchen.
Had some success on it.
Did you absolutely smash it?
Absolutely smashed it and made an unforgettable dessert that people are still talking about 10 years later. But I'm just going to brush over that,
And then the next thing after that, which was completely different, because GBM is, you feel like, they're making a show and it's Jeopardy and it's like, you know, especially when you'd make mistakes and all the cameras are on you and you're like, oh my God, this is horrendous.
Yeah.
And then my first experience of Saturday Kitchen, my most fondest memory of this is Tom Kerridge is, you know, we're really good mates and Tom's been on it, you know, about sort of, I don't know, a year before me. I rang him up, I was like, oh my God, they've asked me to go on Saturday Kitchen, you know, with James Martin, and it's live and all that. And he was like, right, let me tell you, mate.
Tom Kerridge in the room.
That's uncanny, isn't it?
Yeah. He's like, it's live, and they count down from 10, and you'll fucking shit yourself. All I can remember in is his head, and it's like, my name's James Martin, and this is Saturday Kitchen Live. And then that goes to the back, and then it goes 10, 9, that, well, you presented it. I was just stood there, frozen.
Yeah.
And about 10 minutes before, they've said, you know, no swearing. And it was the week before I went on, or sort of 2 weeks, was when Eric Chaveau was on there and was on the omelette challenge let out loads of F's. And I don't know why. That was like living up here rent-free. Yeah.
He's going to start swearing madly.
I don't swear. I know I can pull sentences together without swearing. But why is this just in my mind?
Yeah. Sometimes the most inappropriate thing just won't leave your head.
But this is what I mean, right? Live TV. I've been doing it for a long time. So has my mother. That's like our actual job. To be a chef and then to experience that other thing. Like, it's a really stressful environment.
It's an adrenaline thing.
I love
it.
I live for it.
Cooking live on telly is horrendous.
Yeah.
I still find it fairly horrifying.
Yeah.
The other day, I made fungi, which is like a Caribbean, it's like an Antiguan polenta.
Yeah.
I've made fungi 100,000 times. I can do it with my eyes shut. Literally, be talking to somebody, make the fungi, turn it like in the bowl like this, and it comes out perfect little dome on the bowl. Could I get my fungi to turn? I was like, what the fuck? It was like stuck in the bowl of the bowl, and I couldn't get it to turn. I started to sweat. Like Rick Stein was there. It was making me sweat thinking about it again.
Never admit your mistakes, I think. Because you're a perfectionist and you're cooking in your restaurant and for customers, and like, it has to be 100% perfect.
Yeah.
It never is when you're cooking live on TV. Mm. And that was the first time I did Saturday Kitchen. John Turode said to me, he was just like, whatever you do, the audience might not realise you've made a mistake, so don't alert them to it. So like, whenever I make a mistake, I just pretend it never happened. I just keep going.
I was going, oh no, I did absolutely the opposite, and talk them through every excruciating second of it.
Someone always tweets you and says, I don't know if you realise, but this happened. That. Yeah, like, yeah, I did know.
So I love it when you talk to me about how you prepared for Great British Menu. Like it was like a military operation. Please tell people. Come on.
How old were you when you first did GBM?
Maybe 25.
Okay. Like that. So you already had a mission to start?
Yes.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say anyone knew who I was, though. I think Great British Menu was a good platform for that. Now, I at the time, so we did have a mission to start, but you've been up. You know how remote we are.
It's
the middle of nowhere. We had a struggling business, and I kind of like knew that I'd seen Great British Radio, seen people like Paul on it, and I sort of knew that that is a platform that not many people get an opportunity on. So if I do well on that, that could really make our business work and make things go, because we were like, we were struggling. And so I just went, I have this thing that if you try your absolute hardest, probably no one else will try as hard, right, and then I might win. So I don't really think there's any talent. I think it's just sheer brute determination.
Dogged-mindedness.
So I like practice everything. I brought down all my own equipment. I had like temperature probes and then like another temperature probe to double check the temperature of the temperature probe. One thing after another. And then my final thing was like, I was just like, right, well, I need to make sure I get everything right. I need to make sure I sleep well. So I'm there. So I brought my own pillow from home.
Oh, so Tommy.
Yeah. But like, so I done all the effort. And then, but then it's really good fun. And you're there with all the other chefs and like, you get to know each other and make friends. So I had my own pillow with me, but I was going out having like 10 pints every night after having the worst night's sleep ever. But like, at least I'd done the pre-prep.
Yes, exactly.
I was gutted when Andy turned up. And then take this nice, because Prue, like, I think, I don't know what, but I got a wrap around my little finger. Like, you get the results at the end, and it'd be like, Matthew 8, Oliver 8, Prue 10. Like, yes. Matthew 5, Oliver 6, Prue 10. Like, yes. So I was just like, so long as I'm cooking for Prue, I'm in. I'll do this again, because, like, Prue just gives me 10s. And I rocked up, and I was like,
Who's that?
That doesn't look like Prue. Why isn't she smiling at me?
Checking me out.
Last year, I don't know how, but we went away for the weekend. Like, got a, like an Airbnb, and there was like it was like a telly that's just got all these channels, and so it's not Freeview. It's like Samsung's own thing.
Ratuken, it's called.
That's it. Yeah.
Is that what that is?
There was a channel dedicated to reruns of old school Great British Menu. Oh, I mean, God. Old school, right?
Oh, no, I've seen that in a hotel, like Jenny Bond time.
But the mad thing is, I'm going through, and it's like 2011, and there's like me and like John Hooker and Andre, and I'm like,
it's like your yearbook or something.
So then I just start watching it. I start binge watching it on this, and Emma's like, really? like really? Like this? Anyway, there was a chap from the north called Charlie. And I don't know if you ever recalled seeing this one, and I remember it. And I bet now Charlie thinks, did I really give Jason Avaton a dog turd?
Oh my God.
Oh. No.
So he did a forest floor, he did a whipped like Brandad,
yes,
and then he sprayed it a dog turd.
Deliberately.
Yeah. Like deliberately. Yeah. And then brought it up, and you can see, Jet, and like the thing for me is, if I had been the veteran, I would have been gagging, because I would have been, even though it's food, I would have been thinking dog shit.
So
he wasn't trying to disguise it or anything. He was like, it was deliberate. The idea seemed brilliant, and he's there, and he's a real good character as well. He's a real good character. He was like, "Here you go," and he's giving Jason Avaton a dog shit.
Oh my. A gold dog shit.
Not gold. Just brown. And I was watching that, I was thinking, I bet he looks back at that now and thinks, what was going through my mind?
Things like that, I always think, like, they must have somebody in their support network.
To say, right, that's just a goes, bad idea.
Don't make a dog shit
don't
on telly.
Don't make a dog shit. I mean, it's a very low bar, that, isn't it? It's like, what not to do? Don't make food that looks like dog shit. Actually, a dog shit.
I would
like to ask what it is about Great British Menu that chefs, why they hold it in such high regard.
Yeah, why do
it's something
you
that all chefs want to be part of?
Yeah.
The highest standard, right?
Season 1, 2005, 2006.
You are an absolute Great British Menu nerd alert. Yeah.
So I'd sort of seen, you know, and you'd religiously watch it. And then, like I say, you know, I can remember exactly where I was when you got that call.
Yeah.
And then they sent a team down to come and I had to sort of cook and talk to the camera and see
if I could do that. Because it's quite hard to do.
That. And I know there's a bit of a theme running here, but we were just on the verge of buying Cafe Reggiano.
Right.
So I'd planned a bit of a trip, a bit of sort of like holiday and work. And we went over to Rome, Naples.
I got a phone call saying,
Paul, we would like you to do it. And we just got there, and like Em's was so excited, and we're just about to go on holiday. And I remember she was in the bar and she was talking to me like from the bar, and I'm just sat on the end of the hotel bed, and I am now in What's my starter?
Holidays
what's my
fish over
course?
In your head.
What's my main course? What's my every meal we went out? I'm like, so I was thinking, and that's actually that trip where I actually started talking I was like, imagine you did this sort of like, you know, like the sort of treats you get at the fairground, and again, she's like.
Really?
I hardly ever see you. Like, we're now on a trip away, and great. You're just like, you're just in the zone. Like,
I don't want a menu chat, babe. Yeah.
It's literally partners all over the country. Exactly. Going, poor Emma.
Partners and children of chefs. And your wife, is she in the business as well?
Yeah, we're kind of a family business. So, my sister-in-law, she's a farmer now. So, she was a nurse. For years, and now she's retrained to look after animals, which says is much nicer than looking after people.
Right, well, I can imagine.
Yeah, Charlotte.
Dad's a proper science nerd, dude.
Oh, God, I worry what he said to you. He does a bit of everything. So
he was doing stuff with
black garlic. In Japanese, Korean cooking, like really delicious and sweet. So you make it by like holding it at like 60 degrees for like 6 weeks.
Right.
And it like really slowly caramelizes and it's really delicious. And I was like, I really want to make that, but I just don't know how we'd ever like be able to do it. And like, he obviously heard me talk about it, said nothing, just put some garlic and some apples and a few different things he was experimenting with in a plastic bag on top of the boiler. And then like 6 weeks later, he just rocked up in the kitchen, just unwrapped these carrier bags and was just like, there's your black garlic, there's your black apples, there's your... And I was like, it was like umami, like it was just like incredible. I was just like, that's the best black garlic I've ever tasted. And he's just like, well, it's easy. I don't see what the problem is. You're just like, oh,
made
God.
On top of the
I love you and I hate you at the same time. So yeah, and then but then since then he's like, well, we'll just design a machine and we'll make it. So now, like, that's what he does.
That's what I do.
So we have like four blackening machines. Yeah,
he's like the dad in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I love that. I love that.
That's exactly. That exactly is.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
How do you find working with your family then?
Yeah, I think
like your parents. Yeah, I do it as well.
Well. I think like first you asked me about my wife and like we've got a 2-year-old daughter and I think like we're a great team because like we kind of work together, so like I do this part but like between us like everything gets done, and I think we're like a great teamwork. I think that's sort of how the family works as well, because we all have very different roles and actually as it's sort of grown they become further apart, and actually you don't speak to each other every day like you maybe once did, even though you work in within a few yards of each other often, because like you're doing different roles. And I think
sorry could you just say that would be really great?
No, I
not
said
to speak to each other.
That would be really great.
No, I said that's crazy because you're kind of all building the same thing, but you're right, everyone kind of has their role, like with our team.
Nobody looks out for you like your family. I think that's the main thing. You know you can trust them, and you can fall out as well. You can have crosswords, but they don't really count. Whereas if you have crosswords with someone you're not related to, you have to like fall out and stuff. Yeah. Whereas you can like get on and do something constructive half an hour later. So I think there is a lot of good things to it, and it's something that feels really special when you achieve something together.
When you go on a mad journey with someone that you know. Is your person and you get, you know, you build a restaurant and a business and you're giving all this love to other people. It feels deep. It feels good.
Yeah. See, I think like I've got two kids and I've got niece and nephew as well, my brother's children. And I kind of look at them and think like, I don't want to, in one way, like I don't want to force them into being in the family business that we've built and everything. But at the same time, like, God, I'd be so proud.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah, it means
so much. So I think like as a parent, then you sit back and you're like, I don't know. It's difficult. And maybe you may feel the same, Paul. I don't know. It's difficult to know what the right thing to do is. The last thing you want to do is... Because I remember being a teenager.
Don't let them know you want them to do it.
Ah.
Right?
The psychologies at play here.
You've got to let them think it's their own idea.
Yeah. I suppose you could just get the nieces and nephews and your daughter milking the cows like you had to do.
Yeah.
I want to ask one last thing, actually, from both of you. How do you hope... the food world changes in the next over the next few years, because it's changing all the time. Mm. We've got more women in there. We've got people of colour coming through. Everything is changing. What do you see the next part of our culinary journey to look like?
Speaking from my personal experience of how it was, and I would not change my time for anything. Don't get me wrong. It was very, very physically, mentally demanding, the hours, everything, but I loved it. And it's absolutely shaped me into the person, you know, it's been a massive part of my life. But what's really lovely to see now is when I became a chef, it was quite sort of food that you see now, the street food and all of that. That wasn't there. It was pretty much just about like haute cuisine, fine dining, and not much else. Yeah. If you were a chef. So I think now, if you're going into hospitality, it is so diverse. As whatever you want to do, as long as you're doing it well. If you want to open, you know, a shack on a beach serving lobster rolls, or, you know, just a nice burger or great sandwiches. But as long as you do something well, I think as a country, we are now really, really appreciative of good food in all its guises, not just sort of high end.
Yes.
And then I think for the quality of life for people coming into this industry, and something that is at always now, it's top of the agenda priority for us, is to show, hopefully in what we do, that you can have an awesome career, but you can also have a great quality of life. It doesn't have to be that old thing of hospitality, all right, unsociable, you know, really, really sort of mad hours. And I think that that's something that is so important if it's going to have a proper future, because it's tough right now.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that you know, moving forward, you know, that is, you know, we're so reliant on just the new the young generation, young people coming into it. And I you know, it's tough at the minute, but you know, hospitality is
hold your nerve.
And also there's a lot of good things going on. And you see it now, like the melting pot. You know, when I moved to London, like I say, you know, it was, you know, I knew, like, but it was top, well, you know, the Marco Pierre Whites, the Gordons and stuff. Whereas now, you know, you just there's so much awesome stuff
to learn.
But also as well, I think people really appreciate just good quality food in all of its guises, whether it's 10 quid for a bowl of incredible chicken wings or a £200 tasting
menu.
I'd
give you 20 quid for that.
Yeah. But I'm always sort of, you know, always glass half full. And there is a lot of negativity right now, but
I would echo quite a lot of that. But it's diversity for me. I think a good workplace needs to have a diversity of people. And for too long, in the hospitality industry especially, it's all men. Mm-hmm. And I think that leads to this macho environment, which is things that I don't like. And so my thing's always been this: build this business, but the legacy wants to be not about mission stars and stuff. It's about like the people we bring through, and hopefully if you bring enough people through in the right culture, you actually change culture. And you know, I really want to see a world where there's 50% women in the kitchen, 50% men. But I also think there's so many things that need to happen in order to achieve that, especially around things like what I'd like to see more in terms of like how can women come back to work in hospitality having had children and things like that. How do you make socially acceptable working hours so you can bring up kids and still be a great chef? I think that's a real challenge. You lose all the skill set from people. And I think the other thing is leaders as well. Like in our industry, it's always been like the person who's best at cooking becomes the head chef. And that just never happened. Imagine a mechanic. If you work for Mercedes and you were a really good mechanic, you wouldn't get made CEO of the company, would you?
You just
get paid well to be a mechanic. And I think a lot of the time some of the more toxic traits of the industry that get publicized are actually just down to the fact that we don't have good leaders necessarily, and people who've been, you know, they've been promoted for the wrong reasons, I think. So that would be the change I'd like to see.
I like that.
Me too.
I like that. And the last thing I want to ask you both is, how important is something like Michelin? How important are those kind of accolades, do you reckon?
I think I can be a little hypocritical on this, because for about 350 days of the year...
No,
for 350 days a year, I don't think about it for a second, because we've had a mission start at Black Swan for 10 years, and Roots 5 years or something. Like, so you do, like, you know the level you're operating at, and I am like, I just never even think about it. I don't care. But then a few days before the awards come out, I really care. I really worry about it, and like I want a second star, things like that. But I think that's quite healthy. Like, it doesn't dominate my mind at all. Yeah. But when you get there, or if you sat at the awards, it's hard not to be a bit gutted if you haven't won something or whatever. Yes. But that's sort of where I'm at. Yeah.
What do you think, Paul?
It's a huge part of what it is, you know, we want. You know, we, and obviously, as you know, we've got the pub, we've got the sort of the Mediterranean with the sort of the, you know, the sourdough pizzas, the bar, the rooms. But like number six is a life's work, you know. I opened it in 2005 with three of us, and Michelin star came in 2013. You know, the first 7 years from sort of opening to winning the first star was, Makita's going to laugh now, but yeah, lots of sort of, when it used to come out in January, like holidays, sort of, kind of not sort of ruined, but I'd go to the internet cafe in January and I'd be refreshing the page and I'd be like, it hasn't happened.
Emma, fucking soldier.
Best way I can describe it to you, for me, but it is yellow jersey in the Tour de France. It's like Champions League, World Cup. It's something. Yeah, and I there's lots of other sort of, you know, like lists and guides, but in the world, you know, that I grew up in, and certainly when you were working at, you know, somewhere like, you know, Royal Hospital Road at restaurant Gordon Ramsay, that was the, you were driving for that. Yeah. But what I will say, and I can be very proud of, is that we've never just cooked for that.
No.
Yes.
We've always stayed true to ourselves. And if that comes, and don't get me wrong, in those first 7 years, the agony of it not coming each year, is that was like, God. But we've always stayed true to ourselves and built the businesses. And then it goes back to the TV point. The TV has always been about, you know, I'm in a town where it's already mega famous for Rick Stein. And Rick Stein's been doing an amazing job there since 1975.
Yeah.
Going on to GBM, your Saturday kitchens, those TV things have always been to profile what we do.
Yes.
But yeah, would I love number six to win a second Michelin star? Absolutely. Is that something that me and Chris and sort of like Alice, the restaurant director, talk about? Yeah, of course we do. So what sums it up is when we, the day we won the star, I couldn't get to lunch service because the phone was ringing off the hook. God. People like Rene Redzepi, who I've never met, still to this day, was sending messages through Twitter. And then I finally got onto the service. I just remember being on the pass and pushing like the first plate of food over. And it was like, all of a sudden, we were one of hundreds of thousands of restaurants in the United Kingdom. And at that point, there was about 130 odd one stars.
Yeah.
And it was, suddenly, I can't, that feeling was just, and also responsibility.
Okay,
it was a feeling of responsibility. And that's why, you know.
And pride.
Pride, everything. Yes. And I think it's good to have those ambitions.
Some and people celebrated don't, by your peers, it's a big deal.
It's like being in the elite group of anything, you know.
So nowadays, Michelin is like a quite a glitzy award ceremony, and they announce all the new stars, and you go up and you have your picture. Ooh. Great, lovely. Back then, it wasn't. You used to download a PDF at 11 o'clock. God. So you'd be there refreshing the wedge, babe. And then you'd download this, and there's like all the restaurants in the country. And then you just have a tiny little emblem. So you'd be like going through, and you're like, where do we come under? Are we in York? Or are we in like here? And you're trying to find yourself. And you get you there, you're like, oh, I haven't got it. But then you get like a ruler, and you're making sure that's next to your name. That's why it's so small. It was like so glamorous.
I was in an internet cafe on a Dell.
Not the Oscars.
Paying for an hour's internet, refreshing. Then okay, well, can I have another hour, please, mate?
I think whilst on glass to Emma.
Whilst on holiday, yeah.
Glass to Emma. Emma. To every Emma. Holiday she's ever taken
and
with
every other chef's wife, partner, whoever lives.
True say, actually, this is for the partners of the chefs.
Yeah,
cheers to that.
It's so lovely seeing you guys.
Thank you for coming.
I loved. I just want to say though that actually I love working with both of you, and it's a really a joy to finally cook you some food, and to have you in our home makes me very, very happy indeed. Genuinely, truly.
And I'll just end on something genuine, truly. Obviously, Great British Menu, Bigfoot. You're a game changer for that show.
Come on!
Oh, thank you.
I mean it. True. I think it's. It's been, you know, something like that that's so iconic, been going such a long time, and now that whole thing now is awesome, and you in the kitchen is just brilliant.
Change the dynamic, hasn't
it? I love it. I love the crack we have. I love the what we do and stuff like that. You know, you're an absolute game changer for GBM.
Very, yeah, you're so invested. I think everyone has like a superpower, but I've always thought of you, Andy, is you bring energy to the room. And I think like on a TV show, sometimes, believe it or not, it's grueling. And I always say to my wife when I ring her on an evening after filming, I'm always just like, I'm so glad I'm doing it with Andy, because like you're so invested in it, like you actually really care. And I think often it can be that it's a job for people and you go back to the dressing room in between each set and you never actually talk to each other, whereas you're like, what was it like? Yeah. What's going on? Do you think we ought to put our arm around that person and see if they're okay?
She looked like she was gonna cry.
Yeah. And like, do you think we ought to point them in a different direction with that? Or that was incredible. Mm. And like, there's just so much energy. You feel like you're really like helping and part of something. And like, so I think, you know, that the dynamic has shifted in that show. And I think that's better for the audience. But I think that's all your energy that's done it.
Boys, thank you so much for saying that to my mum.
I told you they were nice.
I knew they would because I knew Paul was great because obviously we went to number six, his restaurant in Cornwall. But I've never met Tommy and what a charming lad. I really like the way he talks about what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it comes from like proper soul of a deep place.
So do you see what I'm saying about both of them? They do this incredibly high-end food that is, you know, all these accolades and Michelin stars and all that stuff. But they're such soulful people.
Yes.
Like when I ask them about, you know, what they want for our industry, what they want to do, what they want their legacy to do, all the things that they said are so beautiful. It's all about nurture and team and the people they work with and all of that building to create these incredible plates of joy
and create a new industry.
Yeah,
they didn't need to say we're trying to change the industry like this. What they're doing and what they're focused on will change the industry and is changing the industry.
That's how the world does change.
Yes,
conversation by conversation, step by step, little by little, bit by bit. You make your corner of the world the nicest, the kindest, the warmest, the best place it can be, and then you take it from there.
Yeah.
And I feel like Tommy and Paul are two men who do that all the time with everything they do. And I feel really proud that I work with them and that I've got that they're colleagues of mine as well as friends of mine, and now I'm really glad you've met them.
It's nice
and
what they said about you as well, isn't it? That was kind of cool. I was like, oh shit, okay.
That was really
and
lovely.
It's so important though, because I can say that to you, but you know, I don't think you ever thought that all the chefs of the country would be your peers and your friends, and to know that you're driving change in their industry, which is now yours, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to see, Mum. So thank you, Paul. Thank you, Tommy. Thank you for being everything I wanted you to
be. I'm going to take you to the Black Swan. We've been to Paul's. I'm going to take you to Tommy's because you're going to absolutely love it.
Yes, please.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.